Hello, I'm Robert Pallas, and you're listening to Cut Talks, double G, U, double T.
I'm just going to go back to one of the posts you had on LinkedIn here. I'll say building great software product is hard, and you're mentioning the book by Marty Kagan, and you said experiment and learn, understand customer needs, balance innovation and execution, roadmaps should be flexible and adaptable. Cross-functional teams work collaboratively. I'm not gonna read all of them, but each one of these is really tough because there are different levels of experimenting and learning. For someone, it might mean something. For someone else, something else. Understand customer needs. This is also where I work with lots of startups, and I tell them, did you talk to potential customers? Did you explore? Yeah, we spoke to one. We just tried to understand, and it ended here for like kind of forever almost. It's like, no, like, you should always go back because it's always data that we need. And we talk about data in different ways, but it's what to do with the data here. So what's your experience working with startups? Because I'm going back to what you were saying, which is something about, is this something we need to build and that should be built? How are the decisions made there? Did you manage to convince someone, like, you know what, don't waste your time, don't waste your money, because you don't really know what you're doing?
I'm like 100% sure that I've convinced some people not to build.
Okay.
And in most cases, it has come down to me giving them alternatives to solve their problem. And this alternative might not be just a competitor that's doing exactly the same. It might be a slightly different route. But as you and I were both consultants, we give advice. But the one who is implementing it is responsible of how they take the advice. For example, talking to the customers when and if they are going to do it. And not everybody will find value in all pieces of advice that we give them. But best part of my job is to sometimes tell them things that they haven't come up with by themselves at all. It might be obvious for some who have been building a lot of products, but for others who are maybe first time in the product building journey, or they have taken different routes to get there, building differently in the past, maybe with success, maybe without, then for them to get this perspective, it can be very helpful.
And I know you might be getting lots of projects now where it's like, yeah, and we use AI and we use AI, right? And we use AI and AI again. And AI is not really new. I mean, it's been there for ages. We've been using AI. I mean, I think pretty much everyone who uses a computer has been using AI somehow. In different aspects. And there's a difference between AI and generative AI. So how would you explain the two from like your perspective, which is, and I want you to be technical but accessible here, to people who build or who want to build something in a small company or a big company? How would you differentiate both?
You're totally correct that AI has been building in the background way, way back in the 50s already. So the journey of artificial intelligence is not something that popped out yesterday and now everybody's crazy and excited about it.
Yep.
But there's one major thing that did happen was that ChatGPT made something that already existed and was already used, the large scale language models. It made it super accessible for everyone. And that could have not happened 20 years ago or 10 years ago, not even 5 years ago, because one of the things that is involved in that process in training those models and making them accessible is compute. So we didn't have the computing power to build so complicated and powerful models and deploy them to be used by millions of people at the same time before pretty much where we are today. And the innovation here actually is still in the user experience side. So people started finding it valuable. It started helping them solve all kinds of tasks. And that's the reason why we are in this kind of AI boom at the moment.
What's your standpoint, again, going back to Gen AI or like not Gen AI in that sense, when we talk about prediction?
Well, that would not be like a Gen AI task. That would be some more basic machine learning and data task. For sure, for machines to find patterns in a large set of data, they are much more efficient in that compared to humans. And predictions is just that, to take what has happened in the past and try to predict what could happen in the future. But nothing is of certain. So our world is not built on certainties. So the machine learning models will just give every event a probability score. Sometimes it's high, sometimes there may be a weak correlation in the data. And even if the probability is 95%, there's still a 5% chance that the opposite event will happen. And we as people just need to take this data and use it in the best way we can.
Do you have any company in mind? Obviously, it should be some company that started gathering or collecting data a long time ago and building the algorithms around it. But do you have a company in mind that is succeeding in their prediction models? Any industry?
Well, certainly, like finance is one that has created a lot of data all the time, and the predictions have very high monetary value. So it's like a race. Most of the trading these days is done by algorithms that are trying to predict what's going to happen next. But even more interestingly, I think it's sports, because sports has a nature of unpredictability, which is larger even than the financial markets. And there's a lot of effort put into sports betting, for example, to understand where a match might go. And if we talk about football, which is one of my favorite sports to follow, there's a 11 players on both sides, and the dynamics of the teams might change depending on who they are playing. So you can build very good prediction models, but the outcome might be still super surprising for you.
Yeah, that's, to be honest, I put it that way. I personally would not put my money on betting for a football game. It's just, I just don't get it. If it's human prediction or if it's, you know, AI, I just, as you say, it's not. But yet, I think what people like is the adrenaline and going back to the experience side of things, right? This is what they enjoy more than anything. Not the results themselves are just is tough. Do you do it? We're on camera.
Sports betting. I have bet on sports, yes. My software development career started in a gaming company. So we were building software for online casinos. And large part of my experience as a consultant is also in that industry. So for sure, I don't see anything wrong with putting in a bet. I haven't done it, to be honest, for quite a while. But when I am watching a game and I do have some interest in it, I might just throw in just for fun, just to throw in a little money to make it even more exciting.
So question, do you trust the algorithms or you trust your gut?
I'm a gut-based betting man if I do place a bet. But at the same time, when I was playing fantasy football back in the like few years ago, I did have a lot of software predictions as well. And I was modeling different teams, how they would play against each other, what would be the expected score of one player or another. But that was like a game that is not played for money. It's just bragging rights with your friends that you were able to guess what's going to happen in a Premier League game better than they would.
How do you train a model? Just talk to a five-year-old, yeah, keep in mind.
I'm not the best person to really explain training like a model. So I'm not like an AI developer. So that part, you would have to ask someone else to explain me like I'm five of training a model.
Okay. So at the moment you're not... So are you, what is your role, let's put it that way, when it comes to AR projects? Are you more on the strategy side rather than the...
Yeah, I'm in most of the projects at the moment. I'm like in a product side. Okay. And what is going to be built and how, and the actual implementation details will go to other people. So I don't write too much software in my day-to-day.
Okay. Unlike Jano, who does that over the weekend.
Yeah. Jano definitely writes more software than I do.
Okay. What is it that you enjoy the most? Because you started off as a coder and you're still in the space. Obviously, you're more on the product side, but on the technical product development aspect of things. In big buzzing technologies, basically blockchain and AI, what is it that you enjoy the most doing? And this can be like yourself or with your team or with collaborators, like external.
I have always enjoyed building stuff. When I was a sole contributor as a software developer, I just took pride in the code that I'm able to write and the features that I'm able to put out there. But if you little bit get more experience and you start managing teams, your output starts feeling larger, because when you put out the task and then someone else might implement part of it, you will just feel that the scale of contribution just grows.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you run a consultancy and consult different projects and products into what and how to build, then you can scale it even further. So like, I feel that I'm contributing to a lot of different products and projects that are building, and that's the main thing, that the benefits that they bring to their users, essentially, that's what we are in this game for.
It starts with the gut. It ends with the gut. It's in your gut.
Gut Talks.
This is the end of this episode of this segment with Robert Pallas. Thanks for listening, and watch out for the next one.